Acts 2:22-24. Fellow Israelites, listen to these words. Jesus the Nazarene was a man whose credentials God proved to you through miracles, wonders, and signs, which God performed through him among you. You yourselves know this. In accordance with God's established plan and foreknowledge, he was betrayed. You, with the help of wicked men, had Jesus killed by nailing him to a cross. God raised him up, God freed him from death's dreadful grip, since it was impossible for death to hang on to him.
Amen. Thank you to our confirmands for helping us lead worship this morning, and thank you to our all-church choir musicians. You have been spectacular. It's not easy being a kid. I don't remember what it's like, but I hear it's tough these days. Pressures at school, pressures at home, pressures at play, pressures in just living life. Once a group of second and third graders were asked, "What's the hardest part about being a kid?" Peyton said, "The hardest thing about being a kid is having to unload the dishwasher." I get it, Peyton. I feel you. Aubrey says, "The hardest thing about being a kid is having everybody else boss you around." Eva said, "It's the math. Definitely the math." I agree. It would be the math for me as well. I'm with you, Eva. Daniel says, "The hardest thing about being a kid is being told no all the time." And Nathan says, "The hardest thing about being a kid is being short." I get it. All good answers. I guess I'm glad I'm not a kid anymore. Well, if you were to ask John Wesley if being a kid was difficult, I know he would have said it was pretty hard. John Wesley was one of 19 kids in his family. He was number 14 out of 19. And if that sounds like a lot, know that his mother came from an even bigger family. She was number 25 out of 25. I can't even imagine. It was a different time. Sadly, not all the children that were born in those days lived to adulthood. The mortality rate in England in the early 1700s was 75%. An astonishing number. Thank God for where we are today. Thank God for modern medicine and medical science. Of the 19 children in the Wesley household, 10 survived to adulthood. Susanna, the mom, was a very, very busy woman. And she didn't get much help at home. Her husband, Samuel, was a rector in the Church of England, and he was away a lot. She almost raised these kids single-handedly. Samuel had very little to do with the kids' upbringing. Susanna ran a tight ship as home, as you could imagine. To say she was strict would be the understatement of the year. By today's standards, you would call her draconian in her child-rearing. Even by 1700 standards, she was more strict than the average parent. It's difficult for us to imagine how she raised her kids, but it's also fair to say that it would be difficult for her to imagine how we raise our kids. There has been a major shift in child rearing over the last 300 years. Today, in a general way, you could kind of say that it's true that parents want to give their child everything that they ask for. Back then, children were to have nothing that they asked for. If you ask for it, you're guaranteed you're not going to get it. Today, parents ask themselves the question, what can I do today to make this day special for my child? Or what can I do today to make today the greatest day of my kid's life? Back then, Susanna Wesley asked herself, what can I do today to conquer my child's will? I'm not evaluating either. I'm just drawing out the differences. You all can do the evaluating, but I think it's fair to say we've gone from one extreme to the other, right? I would imagine that anybody who comes from a really big family, you might feel like it's easy to get lost in the crowd. You wonder if you're special. How am I special? How do I stand out? How do I look unique? How does it come across like I matter in the world? When you're number 14 out of 19 or number 25 out of 25, how would you possibly feel like you can make a difference, like you can leave a mark upon this world? Well, for John Wesley, that feeling of set-apartness and that feeling of being special came in dramatic fashion. When he was 5 years old, the family house caught on fire. It started in the corn barn, but in those days, the barns were so close to the houses that it wasn't long before the fire spread from the corn barn to the house. And the family must have been sound asleep because it took a burning roof timber falling on the bed of one of the kids before they woke up and realized something was wrong. Fortunately, Samuel, the father, was at home at the time, and the family sprang into action. The house was engulfed in flames, so they had to move fast. They gathered all the children. They fought their way through the flames. They got down the stairs outside into the frozen February night. And it was Samuel's intention to take the family into the church hall, but he forgot his keys upstairs. So he had to go back in the house, back through the flames, back up the stairs, into the bedroom to get his keys and come back down. Once out of the house, a second time, it was only then that Samuel and Susanna realized John Wesley, wasn't with them. Little 5-year-old John Wesley was still trapped in the house. Samuel tried to go back in a couple times. He tried to go up the stairs, but he was beaten back down by the flames. He couldn't do it. It was a moment of panic, a moment of desperation. He went back outside, knelt down in prayer, and commended his son's soul to God. Well, thank God, that's not the end of the story. Little 5-year-old John Wesley had no intention of resigning himself to the flames. And according to his mother's journal, he managed to climb up on the window, open the window, stand outside on the ledge of the window, and scream for help. Susanna said she remembered the burning ceiling of his bedroom collapse behind him. Some neighbors who had gathered from all the commotion quickly formed a human ladder, one on top of the other. They reached up. Little John jumped. They brought him down. He was saved. Thanks be to God. Saved from the flames. A miracle indeed. Well, this ordeal traumatized the whole family and left its mark on the entire family for the rest of their lives. It's difficult to find meaning in the immediate aftermath of a tragedy. Sometimes it takes weeks. Sometimes it takes months. Sometimes it takes years. Initially, a person just feels numb. We're still in shock. We can't quite grasp what just happened here. Sometimes, when the shock wears off, we start to find some meaning, sort out answers in life. Well, it was a couple years later before Susanna finally had come to terms with the fire and was beginning to reflect theologically on it, outside of simply just saying, God has saved my son and thanks be to God for doing so. And after a couple years' time, she began to feel like John was special. John was set apart. John was perhaps saved by God for a purpose. And in a general way, she thought that about all of her children, but in a very specific way, she thought that about John. And she prayed and she promised to God that she would tend to the soul of this child even more so than all of her other children, and do whatever she could as a mother to care for and nurture and tend to his religious upbringing, his spiritual upbringing, his emotional development, and his intellectual development. And so there's no question that in time, number 14 out of 19 began to feel special, set apart, like he mattered in the world, like he was going to leave a mark. And she began to call young John the brand plucked from the fire. The brand plucked from the burning. That's a powerful metaphor. Both the experience and the attention that Susanna gave to John left an indelible mark on young John. He was forever branded. That left a mark on his heart. Susanna was quoting Zechariah, the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah used that phrase to refer to Joshua, the great priest of Israel, who was indeed that brand plucked from the fire by God to leave his mark on the world. To be plucked from the fire is to have God burning hotly in one's heart, like a hot branding iron. Perhaps even to have one's heart strangely warmed. And I do wonder if in the moment of John's conversion experience that we talked about last Sunday, when he felt his heart strangely warmed, did he feel like he had become that branding iron, a flame for God, a flame with passion, burning hotly, in love with the Lord, and wanting to leave his mark for God on the world? It's our belief that every single one of us has been called for a purpose. God has a plan for all of us. God has intentions for all of us, good intentions. God can use us and wants to use us and plans to use us no matter who we are, no matter what we've done, no matter how useless or worthless we feel like we are sometimes. You are not. You are not worthless. You are not useless. You are a child of God. It was Martin Luther, the great German reformer, who once spoke of the priesthood of all believers. It's one of the hallmarks of the Protestant Reformation, and one of the hallmarks which characterizes Protestant Christians, of which we, United Methodists, are indeed a part. It was a radical concept for the day, radical for the prevailing thought of the day, radical for the established church of the day, the Roman Catholic Church, which said, it's the priests who are set apart. It's the priests who are special. It's the priests who are worthy of being raised up. It's the priests who have been called for special duty. The priests have a special calling. Well, they do. But so do you. So do you. We're all priests. We're all ministers. We're all pastors of the gospel. And some people look at me from sometimes and say, well, you're the pastor. And I want to say, well, so are you. We all have this calling. We all have this task. We all have this mantle to take up. We're all priests. And you may not think of yourself that way. You've maybe have never thought of yourself that way, but I invite you to start thinking of yourself that way today, because we are all part of this calling. We are all part of God's holy family, and God is calling you. God is calling you. Not every single one of us to ordained ministry, but God is calling us to some kind of ministry. God is calling us to something. And what is your something? And if you don't know, I invite you to begin thinking about it. Spend some time in prayer with God. And when you come up with an idea, let us know. because that may indeed be God's calling for you. Baptism is a type of branding. Thank God it's less harsh than a literal branding, right? But it still leaves an indelible mark on us, whether we realize it or not. Some of us remember our baptisms. Most of us don't, perhaps, because we were too little. That's because in the United Methodist Church, we celebrate a prevenient grace, a grace that goes before, a grace that paves the way, a grace that reminds us that we are loved. God loved us before we loved God. God called us before we were aware that God called us. God chose us before we chose God, and God wanted us before we wanted God. Confirmation is the confirmation of our baptism. It's the confirmation of this indelible mark on our lives. It's the confirmation that we were chosen by God, that we were set apart by God, that we are special, and that in confirmation we understand that God does indeed have a plan and intent for our lives. And when we are confirmed, we're saying yes to God and stepping out into that great unknown, trusting that God is there to grab us and pull us and lead us in this path that God has called us to go. And finally, confirmation is the affirmation that you and all of these folks that you see out here are part of a wonderful family called God's family. All these folks sitting out here in the pews are your sisters and your brothers in Christ. And it bears repeating from time to time, lest we forget who we are and whose we are. You are God's. You are God's child. Plucked from the burning. Some of us literally, some of us non-literally. Sometimes that's just a spiritual metaphor. But all of us have been brands plucked from the burning. You're part of God's good family. Part of God's beloved community. No matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what you've done, you are God's. You are special. You are set apart for God's family. And I pray this sermon, I pray these words are going to leave a mark